today we'll be answering the burning question, what the heck's a dueling GM?
Okay, so beside the duality of our discussions, it's a pun, and we just like puns, okay? Obviously, it's two GMs having a conversation, and we don't always agree on the topic.
But we always try to cover points of view from GM and players, designs and details.
Do that line again.
But we always try to cover points of view from GM and players, designs and details.
However, more importantly today, we want to introduce the idea of dual as in two, otherwise known as cooperative GMing. So,
welcome to Dueling GMs. I'm Joseph.
And I'm Anthony.
This is a show for GMs and players.
One about designs and details.
To build a better role-playing community. So, cooperative GMing, what is it? Let's talk about design.
Okay, so I think cooperative GMing is, for most people, it's more just a concept than something they've ever tried. And that's why we wanted to tackle it, because you and I have done this a couple of times and it's a lot of fun. So conceptually, it's a way of multiple people actually helping with the storytelling side of things, the system running side of things. You can use it for a lot of different things. What's your take?
Yeah, cooperative GMing is essentially more than one person working together to make this an experience that is hopefully unique and memorable.
That's a pretty decent definition there, yeah.
So, I mean, why would someone want to use this concept, this cooperative GMing that we're trying to define here?
Well, for one, it's different, which goes a long way in my book. It's a lot of fun. You can come up with cool ideas and concepts that you probably wouldn't be able to do on your own. It allows you to kind of get caught off guard from time to time, which is also fun. And it's half the responsibility. It's half the time. The trade-off is that you need somebody that you can trust and coordinate with.
Yeah, it helps maybe with avoiding the term forever DMs, where someone is in the pilot seat for far too long than they want to be.
Yeah, for sure. And the nice thing is that if you do it in particular ways, then each DM or GM only knows part of the entire plan, which means that even as a GM, you're still kind of playing and experiencing things and getting it for the first time, instead of the entire story arc already going off in your head and you know every single plot beat that you've got planned. If there's multiple people helping to run things, no matter which angle that you go about it, it makes things fresh and new every single time you sit down at the table.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's actually talk about some of the types of co-GMing and then maybe talk about how to use it, like, conceptually.
Okay. So there's one. I'll start with the one that I'm pretty familiar with personally, because I know it's one that you haven't experienced, and that's the West Marches idea, if anybody's heard of that. The concept is essentially there is a big, vast world, and all of the characters, the PCs, are starting in a particular town, a kingdom, whatever the case is. There's a group of GMs that are set up to essentially help you uncover the fog of war. And so you venture out, you explore, and then you come back. And the idea is basically that you come and report back to the guild, to the kingdom, whoever it is, and you start to map this world out. And so each GM kind of takes over different areas, different provinces, however you want to play it. But on any day that you're not running as a GM, you can come in with the PC as a player. There isn't an overarching story that forces you to stick with one set of four or five PCs the entire time. So you can really, one day you're a player, one day you're a GM, the next day you're a player. It's really nice.
Yeah. The next one is what most people are probably familiar with, which is a rotating GM around a table for a shared singular story, right? Essentially, each player has some level of control of like a story arc or a piece that they want to share. They sit in the captain's chair and they tell their story. And once that arc kind of comes to a close, the next player picks up in the next week or so. This concept is, I feel like, very similar to how like you get new directors for a TV show or like a movie compared to the next movie. You know, there's a general goal that everyone's trying to achieve, but it is going to have a different feel for each particular episode or arc,
right? If you right. Will. And it still requires some cooperation on the part of whoever else is a GM. You may want to say, hey, can you set up this particular story? Just hint at it or introduce this particular NPC because it'll be super important down the road. And so there's a little bit of collaboration there, even though you kind of have your own separate stories.
Yeah.
And then the third one that we don't do as much here, but probably more of you have experienced, especially through the lens of Critical Role and what they've started doing with Exandria Unlimited. And this is the idea of having a shared world and having open and closed stories. Open being that I've done a story arc, I'm giving you start to finish, except I didn't really give you a finish. I've maybe run out of ideas, or I intentionally want to leave it on a cliffhanger. And yet my time as a DM maybe has run its course. Maybe you're doing it on a timer. You're doing 3 months, 6 months and rotating through. And you say, okay, this particular story is open. Somebody can pick it up and run with it if they want, versus you saying, okay, I'm intentionally leaving this on a cliffhanger. I'm going to close the story off because I have a plan for what to do with it down the road. And you can still participate in the shared world, but don't touch these particular cities, these particular stories, these particular NPCs. I've got an idea for that. Anything else is fair game. And I feel like the Exandria Unlimited has done a really good job of that, tying in stories that Matthew Mercer has intentionally allowed them to work with. And that they have questions, they come running back to him and say, hey, well, what about this? What about this? And he contributes ideas to their stories, and it fleshes out a really cool shared world that way.
Yeah, and the main one that we're going to be talking about tonight is dual GMs, the concept where two GMs, it's a co-pilot and pilot setup where you have two running a particular game.
Yeah, and this is the one that we've done, you and I, a little bit here. So we're going to share some of our insights, some of the things that we found it works really well with, and you know, help you maybe lay down a runway so you can take off and fly with your pilot and co-pilot.
Yeah. So kind of let's break it up a little bit into how this might look, like some of the details of kind of a before, between sessions, and then during sessions, because like you said, some people have just a general concept of what this might look like, but not necessarily specific. So let's share kind of what we discovered in our own gameplay and go from there.
Yeah, I think a lot of the benefit started immediately when we were planning out the world and planning out the story. We sat down for a couple of hours one day and just started kind of spider webbing story and saying, well, what if this happened? And then they go and do this thing. And we were really dumb about it and planned like three entire seasons worth as if we were, you know, planning the next couple books of Game of Thrones or something like that. It was actually a relatively short lived campaign, especially as far as campaigns go for the groups that we usually run, just because people stopped being able to participate and we had a large group, so it kind of fell apart.
Scheduling conflicts
always get you the real BBEG. But yeah, we spent a lot of time and we plotted out a ton of different things. And if either one of us had tried to come up with that timeline on our own, we would have either had way too many gaps or we would have had just not nearly as cool of a story, to be honest.
Yeah, I feel like the world building, you know, collaboratively, you know, it gives you an idea, concepts to kind of bounce off of each other, you know, group brainstorming, you know, collaborative sessions. It's really interesting and different versus just DMing, you know, your own game where you have the input of the players, but, you know, you're building a story, but to have someone else say, well, what if we did this? Or what if we combined ideas?
Right.
And like, oh, I didn't think of that. Like, you know, we all take inspiration from things, but maybe two heads are better than one.
Yeah. And we talked a lot in other episodes about how your game should be a collaborative storytelling effort on the part of the GM and the players.
Absolutely.
Well, this takes that to the next step and you have collaborative storytelling and even collaborative story planning on the part of multiple GMs. And so, yeah, mm-hmm. It definitely is. Two heads are better than one. Your idea is never going to be as good as our idea.
Yes.
It's the communist approach to role playing.
yeah, no, it's true. Like, you know, having that group, you know, collaborative storytelling with the players is a must. But it is interesting when two GMs work together as well to further enhance and polish it up, which, you know, is pretty fun. So another thing that I thought was fun when we ran was creating different encounters. Mm-hmm. We had some expectations of a couple, you know, options that the players were heading towards. But I didn't have to come up with, you know, a couple of different encounters myself. It was, if they go down this path, let me do that. That sounds like something that would be up my alley.
Right.
And this one might be up yours. Like, you know, go for it, run wild. And it became a nice divide and conquer mentality, which
we really set up two different. At one point, we weren't sure if they were going to side with one faction or side with a different faction in a particular scenario. And so we set up two different mini dungeon runs, mm-hmm. dungeon crawls. And so you tackled if they, you know, went with one faction, I tackled with a different faction. And normally either you're going to railroad the players and in a way that basically they're going to run the same dungeon regardless of who they side with, or you're going to go the extra mile and plan two separate dungeon crawls in that scenario. And that's twice the work. So if you have multiple PCs or multiple GMs for your PCs, then they can, yeah, each of you do one. And then it's a surprise for the other person because they've not seen it before.
Yeah, that's true. Like, I think in that particular example, it was like the industrialism versus like druidic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was kind of a neat, like, okay, I wonder what you're going to make for yours, but I know it's going to be totally different than what I'm making for mine. So
right.
The excitement there is also true for just the other GM there.
Yeah, for sure.
The other thing that was enjoyable that I liked was creating NPCs. We had general ideas, and you always have, you know, general, you know, Boblin the Goblin setups, but sure. You know, a couple of core NPCs, like ones that needed to be well defined, like, you know, we kind of shared who they are, you know, their motivations, so like, you know, we had that together, but it also made for, you know, a nice setup of like you know, who's going to be the quest givers, who's going to maybe backstab, you know, the party depending on their choices that they make. So just, you know, being on the same page, but like having, you know, unique options that I didn't have to make as many, but we always had like, you know, a bag of NPCs that you made half of them, I made half. And it was right. Like, okay, like makes a nice little variety that way. So
yeah, and we would always come back together after saying, okay, you pursue, you build this faction out, build, you know, the main NPC, that type of thing, and I'll build this one out, and we'll come back together and talk through it, sync up a little bit, and then figure out, hey, that gives me a new idea for another NPC that's part of my group. And, you know, we'll do some feedback and here's how they interact or here's how they hate each other. And then building that, you know, connectivity. So collectively we knew, the shared story, but then we more intimately knew the individual stories of certain ones as opposed to other ones. And again, yeah, it's half the work, but we're, or the same amount of work to create twice as much world, depends on how you approach it.
Yeah. Now it is important though. It's a little bit of extra responsibility to sync up, right? Knowing the type of NPCs that you've created, you know, you spent maybe a week or a couple weeks on some plot, some path progression options, for the story, some NPCs, and I have no idea. And I've done the same, and maybe, you know, it's important that we're at least on the same page. So the syncing up responsibility is a little bit heavier, but like you said, at the same time, we just created twice as much world content without that much time spent.
Right.
So it's,
and we had a few opportunities where people were, we said, I think I did some handouts at one point and like gave either secret roles or like some sort of, there was something I put in envelopes. It was a couple of years ago at this point. I honestly don't remember. But if we had said, hey, let's do that, and then more generically had just agreed to, hey, let's do that, and we didn't sync up and say, okay, Anthony's going to actually make sure this happens, then we could show up at the session and say, oh, I thought you were going to take care of that. Right. So we did have to touch base a couple of times during the week and say, okay, who's taking care of this? Who's taking care of that? And then even last minute, if you're running by yourself, you can change things on the fly and not tell anybody but yourself, obviously. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we would kind of meet up 10, 15 minutes before everything started and just kind of touch base and say, okay, we still on board for this? Is this how we're plotting out? And then if we had to, you know, a last minute, you know, change of, you know, story or change of ideas or whatever, we could say, actually, I was thinking about going this route instead. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it takes a little bit more work and a little bit more time in that regard, but I feel like it saves so much more elsewhere.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. And kind of just piggybacking a little bit off that is, you know, you are coming up with certain ideas, certain aspects of the world, the lore, that, you know, will be shared, or maybe it shouldn't be shared right away. Just being in sync with, you know, what's considered, you know, a plot twist or secret lore for now, but will be revealed later. I don't want to be like, oh, just go ahead and roll on that, and I'll tell you everything that the other GM told me 5 minutes ago.
Right. Yeah. The second one, just think, wait, you're gonna, I had that plan for like 3 months from now, and you're just gonna spill the beans because they rolled a 14.
Right.
But the other fun thing with secret lore is with two GMs, you could have some secret lore that you're also withholding from the other GM to dump on everybody later and kind of change things up a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. And that kind of, you know, hidden information from the other GM can definitely be useful at times because, you know, you think of how to progress the story a little further just with that extra knowledge later, but you don't want to share that yet.
Right.
You know, it definitely helps a lot because sometimes a GM might feel bad for the players for not getting certain information. So you're like, oh, let me just help in a different way. And it's like, no. I don't know that information.
Yeah.
Just stop right there. So yeah, that's all good. So yeah, syncing is, you know, being on the same page is super important. Being, you know, on the same, you know, definition on that, but like, you know, plot, tone, setting, even like, you know, starting the campaign, we talked about, you know, some world building stuff, but we also had to decide together as well what what type of tone, you know, is the story going to be? What kind of setting is this going to be? You know, a harsher environment? Is this, you know, are we adding certain homebrew items? You know, how do we do all that stuff? You know, being just one GM, you have to make these decisions, but it's not a matter of, you know, you don't have to confide in another person. You just sort of decide.
Right. And you don't want it to be like with kids, where if the player doesn't like the answer they get from one GM, they run to the mom GM right. and ask the same question. You need to be on the same page and know that you're going to get the same answer from each of them, or to know that for certain questions, you can say, hey, that's not actually my area of focus. Go ask the other GM specifically, and what they say goes. And so, again, it takes some of the responsibilities off of you. And we'll talk here in a second about running during the session, but you can decide any mechanical rulings, any rules rulings. You've got one person that's designated for that. Go and talk to them. And that alleviates a little bit for those of you who maybe are too too enabling of a GM. If you have a rules lawyer GM that's also working with you, you can just kind of defer to them on that, and vice versa. If you're the type that wants the hand wave, yeah, sure, you can have this item. I don't really care. And there's other ones that are a little more, you know, knowledgeable about what types of homebrew things to include. Well, maybe that person is the default go-to. But yeah, it works for so many things of splitting up the planning, when to do plot beats, when to do your milestones for leveling, how many items to implement, who's responsible for coming up with what items to give them, all that sort of stuff. And so many of those things that takes you hours upon hours during the week, if you can just divide that up ahead of time and you know you're coming in with your 50% and the person that you trust is going to come in with their 50%, well, then you probably have more than 100% of a good GM at that point, because now you've got two really good GMs working in sync.
Yeah. So let's kind of dive into during sessions. Like, well, what does that look like? How do two GMs break up responsibilities while the session is going?
Well, I think probably the easiest way is just to kind of speak into some of the things that we did, and it almost kind of naturally fell into. We didn't necessarily even plan ahead for them, but looking back then, as we've talked through this with other people, that's been our recommendation. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we almost naturally started to do was you were running a good chunk of the story, and that allowed any time that there was an NPC that was introduced, then I basically played the NPC. So I was, you know, the supporting cast, and you were the narrator and a lot of what was going on. And so you didn't have to switch voices all the time. You didn't have to have conversations with yourself and facilitate things. There was a lot more of that going on. Or if we had multiple NPCs, again, neither one of us had to have conversations with ourselves. You and I were talking to each other just like the PCs would talk to each other. So that was one thing that we've kind of fell into naturally, that one of us handled story, one of us handled characters a little bit. So that was kind of nice.
Yeah. I know, at least for me, sometimes it can feel overwhelming as a GM to have all the things that you need to, you know, be juggling with, right? Right. You got to make sure that the story beats, the goals of the player characters, their plots, you know, the NPCs, their voices, their motivations, all this stuff, you're just constantly in the air. Oh, wouldn't it be nice if someone took half of that, right?
Right.
Like you said, like having the narrator versus the NPC, that was part of that syncing up before of like, all right, the NPC's goal is, you know, the quest giver, let's just say. You figure out the personality, or maybe we already decided that and we synced up with that beforehand, but you run the NPC, you give them a voice, you breathe life into them, and I'll just describe the scenario in which the party comes across as NPC.
And it was kind of nice early on too. The group that we were running had escaped prison. They got onto a ship and were talking with the captain. And there was a particular question, I think, that was asked of you of the captain, and you pause just long enough for me to interject and basically drop a new NPC on the spot. And so then suddenly, like, the cabin boy was there, and it was the captain's son, and I was able to answer in character but without taking over that NPC. And so then we had the byplay of, you know, the captain and his son both helping to run the ship, and he was, you know, the little spark plug, and then, you know, this was the old grizzled veteran type of thing. And so we had some cool dynamics there, but it was because somebody had asked a question and I, as a GM, knew the answer, but I wasn't playing that NPC, so I just, you know, dropped a new NPC in there. And it actually ended up really cool for, you know, the characters to have multiple people to interact with then.
Yeah. And then the banter worked out really well from that point on, because then you were one, I was another. Like, I didn't know what you were going to say because I'm not that person, you know, like, and that was the fun part, right?
Yeah. Or if you have opportunities, when I think they probably did, where they were asking, well, should we do this or should we do that? Your NPC suggested one thing, my NPC suggested another thing, and you fight against the situation that at least we have sometimes in our party, and you all probably do as well, where they're really asking the NPC to solve the problem for them by virtue of the GM answering. And so if you have two GMs giving you two different options, it's then putting the onus back on the players to make the decision rather than the GM to decide for them.
Yeah. In some of our groups, it's definitely like a in-game meta way of asking the GM what's the correct answer.
Right.
So if anyone else is experiencing that, having, you know, one NPC always tells the truth and the other one lies at the same time at the gate, then you know, it does put it back on the party to say, okay.
Or they have different experiences and different motivations, and so neither one of them are lying. They both think that they have, you know, the right answer, but both of them can't be right.
So having, you know, that separation there and how to break up the responsibilities is good there. Another way that we did in different sessions, and, you know, obviously this can change from session to session, or you know a lot of discussions need to be had, but on how to separate, but all these kind of worked in our favor. We did a story verse system setup at times.
Yeah. So I think that's kind of what I was alluding to earlier in the before and between, that we collectively came up with the story, but you played more the narrator, which allowed me to just constantly be looking up rules questions, because we had a lot of new people, and so we didn't want to necessarily teach them wrong stuff. So if anybody said, well, how do I do this, and you know, I was always just kind of there doing the lookups, that way you could just continue the story going, and then when I had an answer, then boom, hey, I've got an answer to your question from 5 minutes ago, here's what it is.
Yeah, we didn't have to pause the story, but if it was something that we needed to know the answer immediately, obviously we did. But if it was like, okay, well, how does this work? Well, you know, Anthony will get back to you. I, Joseph, will just keep telling, you know, we'll keep the story going. And then once an answer is discovered, like you said, then you have an answer. So a lot of, you know, rules, lookups, it's important, it's a necessary evil. We didn't have to do that a lot, but at times it was good. And then it was instructional. It was almost like teaching in the middle of the story itself.
Yeah, which I think was necessary. We had a pretty large group, and at least half of them, they had basically never played at least D&D before, even if they had, you know, played some other tabletop game. So it was probably necessary for that, which led into how we ran our encounters as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we split up encounters a little bit differently each time, but overall, we had, I think it was, I don't remember which one of us, I think it was me running the overall encounter, making sure that the turn order was happening.
Right.
You know, you mentioned they were on the ship, like environmental things, weather, if the ship was rocking to an extent, and then you were the actual creatures, you had the boss, like sea serpent, the various tactics that they decided to use. Like, I had no control over that. You knew all the actions and what they could do. And I just made sure that, you know, kind of as I told the story, it kind of gave me a moment to continue to think about the story, you know, any last second changes or, you know, while the encounter was going, and just sort of making sure that, you know, so-and-so is on deck, you're up next, you know, turn order, and just saying like, oh, you know, I didn't think about, you know, there's other NPCs, there's people rowing the boat, like, let's, you know, it gave us a lot more brain power to put towards an encounter without you, you know, without a singular GM just handling everything.
Right. And, and you don't have to necessarily play both sides. Where I know at one point this sea serpent kind of arm came around and smacked the side of the boat and, you know, knocked off some of the sailors. And, you know, if you're playing as a GM and you're playing as some of those NPCs and you've just been having conversation and you're technically, you know, still playing some of the other NPCs and want them to survive and you're helping, you know, you don't want to necessarily have just sea serpent arm come and knock off and I'm going to roll a D8 to see how many of them actually fell into the water. Oh, 7 of them. Great. Where I just kind of took on the role of the antagonist and you were helping the protagonist. And so I rolled a 7, 7 of them are gone. What are you guys going to do now? And so you don't pull your punches as much, which I felt was kind of nice for that. But yeah, like you said, you were able to kind of help the people, hey, you're up next. And so one of the other nice things, again, with us having brand new people, I remember you had to kind of go up and almost hover over some of the new people because they're looking over their sheet for the first time. This was one of the first combats that we'd had at the time. And they're still trying to figure out, what does this mean on my sheet? What does it mean that I can do this? And so you were kind of answering questions on the side as I was, you know, moving their minis around and giving people the visual of what the monster was doing. You were able to kind of play, teacher, I was going to say babysitter, but that's not the right word, teacher, in the middle of combat, instead of, again, having to stop and look up things and answer questions and break up that immersion. So that was really nice.
Yeah, like just knowing that who was up next, like I would say, all right, like, do you know what you're going to be doing or a general idea? And if they're like, actually, I don't know what this means, you know, easy to break on, you know, break it down, explain while combat's still happening. You know, you were still, you know, being the, you know, antagonistic creature. And, you know, I didn't have to worry about like, oh, well, hold on. Like, it's someone else's turn. I need to go roll some dice. Like, no. Like, Anthony's got that.
Right.
That worked out.
Your focus was purely on the players. My focus was purely on the terror of the moment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And also just like, you know, environment stuff as well.
Yeah.
You know, if it's this was on the water, there wasn't a storm, but, you know, if it was, it could be, you know, making the deck slippery or rocking the boat too much or, you know, any volcanic eruptions in the distance. Like, you know, there's so many different environment things you add on. Like, you sometimes forget about that because you are juggling with a whole bunch of other things, as we've already described.
Yeah. And I think we did something with a big storm that came in a session or two later where we also broke it down similarly. One of us was the storm, essentially, and the other person was handling. We kind of, I think, did it almost as like a skill challenge. And so, okay, what are you doing on your turn? What are you doing on your turn? You're going to, you know, make sure that you tie down ropes. Okay, great. Roll that. And then it comes around to the storm's turn. Okay, what's the storm doing? And that was not determined by the GM who was helping the PCs at the time. It was, you know, the antagonist. So it really kind of, I think it helps you in some ways not have to play both sides, because you as a good GM still want the players to succeed. But if you want to give them a fair and fun challenge, part of you has to be at least pulling a little bit for them to fail. Otherwise, the challenge, you're going to pull your punches. So to have two, you almost have a duality there. Instead of having to split yourself, there's two people, and you don't always have to be the antagonist. I think it seemed like a lot of times I was, but it worked for us. And so for other people, you know, running it different ways, they may decide every single encounter, let's flip flop, let's go back and forth. But at least for when we were running in that short stint, it worked for us that you were the helper, you were the good cop, and I played bad cop. And collectively, yeah. you know, it was a really good story.
Yeah. And I think we actually started to plan, you know, kind of combining encounters with the NPC banter of like, all right, you were playing this captain pretty well. You know, if there was going to be a situation where the captain's life was at stake from an NPC, not necessarily a creature, like I could take on that antagonistic role,
right,
and still have that NPC discussion or fight or whatever that might be.
Yeah.
Without, you know, a play of two is better than a play of one. And so I think, you know, that's also a great way of doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the next thing that we had as well, part of the prison break, was if the party decides to split / a split story. I think that's worth kind of keeping them separate, but also combined at the same time. So let's kind of talk about that for a few.
So the split story probably is the easier way to start it. I think if the party decides to split and it's not part of the plan story, then obviously then you're doing a similar thing. You're just doing it completely on the fly. But we had at least two options for them to get out of prison. One was through the sewers and one was back up and out and a different direction entirely. And so I think what we had planned was for the potential of them splitting, but knowing that if they all decided to go one way, then you would run one particular encounter, I would run the other encounter. And it did just so happen that they split about 50-50 on that. And so you took part of the group and took them in the other room and you know, they took their sheets, took their dice with them, and you can do this just as easily in your Discord groups. You just have multiple voice chats and you just all leave the main voice chat and go into another one until you send a text or, you know, give a thumbs up to the GM in the other room that they probably have come back to your prearranged or at least a reasonable meetup spot. And that could be multiple sessions if you really need it to. But for what we did, it was maybe a 20-30 minute split. They did what they needed to do, and we knew ahead of time, hey, this is where we're going to have them meet, is out at the docks, and where they're going to see each other really far away, and that's probably good enough for them to come back together. But yeah, it worked really nice.
Yeah, the main reason we did that, which I thought was interesting and I liked, was it definitely prevented metagaming. Sometimes that can bleed, or you know, sometimes it makes sense for it to happen, but no, I'm not saying it's bad. I think we've talked about that before where there's different, you know, reasons, but anyway, yeah, so you know, they did their own thing, but you and I still, like, we send each other post-it notes at the time. You can just send the other DM DMs and yeah, just sort of know where the other party's at, because you don't want to be like, okay, time jump for party, you know, for group one, but no time jump for group two, or one's in combat, so you know it's taking a while and 6 seconds has passed.
Group two don't bother showing up next week.
Right. So you want to try to synchronize that as best as possible with different encounters, maybe, you know, like the time it takes for them to, you know, talk their way out of, you know, the next phase with, you know, their meeting up at the docks makes more sense now.
Yeah.
So yeah, that worked out pretty well. But then just not knowing what the other group was up to, did they talk to certain NPCs? I think we did that again at another session where it was like, okay, we want to go talk to, you know, this, you know, priest over at the temple. And the other half of the group was like, we want to go shopping. And it's like, oh, okay. Like,
yeah,
let's, they decided to split. Like, let's do that.
Ended up meeting with the business leaders. And that's where we got to the two separate encounters we were talking about with the druidic faction versus the industrial faction, because both of them had been recruited, both groups had been recruited, and then they collectively had to come together and say, well, are we going to continue to split the party, or are we going to go one direction or the other?
Yep. Yeah, they had the option then of deciding if they wanted to help or hurt.
And the nice thing was you didn't know what the other group had actually been told. You only knew what the group said they had been told. Yeah. Which is kind of nice. Again, it helped prevent metagaming. Not that we necessarily expected to have that problem with that particular group, but it is a nice benefit. The other huge thing that's literally splitting up the group into two sections does is it handles a lot of the problem that you hear when somebody says, don't split the party. Because yes, theoretically splitting the party, there's a better chance of some of them getting ambushed, dying, because you're not at full strength. But honestly, for the most part, when people say don't split the party, it's because they don't want to sit around for 30, 45, 60 minutes waiting for their turn to come around. And it's hard to juggle when you have the party split up into two, three, four, five different directions, all doing their separate things. It's hard to say, okay, well, you get 5 minutes and I got to stop, and you get 5 minutes, because then it doesn't feel like you've got a cohesive plot running through there. So literally allowing them to just stand up from the table, go in the other room and continue what it is they're doing. Nobody feels like they're stopping and waiting and, you know, running their fingers around the table, just, you know, singing the Jeopardy theme song, whatever it is, just hoping that they get a chance to actually play sometime this week. The don't split the party thing, it at least helped handle, in my estimation, the bigger reason why people use that trope. And that's the fact that nobody wants to go to a TTRPG session and not play their TTRPG and just watch other people, you know, talk about the things they did when you were someplace else.
Right. It can get boring. So
yeah.
That definitely solves that problem for sure.
Yeah, so we were able to keep things flowing, but at the same time, not feel like anybody was being railroaded. We almost gave people more options because they didn't feel confined to all agree and go and do the same thing all the time.
Yeah, and again, that also required communication between you and I,
sure,
saying like, okay, you know, this might take another 15 more minutes, like fill the time, or, you know, add something else, or, you know, you figure that out, but I'm just giving you a ballpark.
They pissed off the city guards. You may want to plan a combat for your group because mine's about to have a fight.
Right. Or maybe if they split the party, but it's not too far, you hear the sounds of fighting in the next, you know, street over, or from this building. And then the party realizes that, oh, that was the building that the other half went to. Huh.
Maybe we should, or even something. Little nudges that says, hey, they're going into the bank. If you want to meet up, you know, you shoot them a little note that says, figure out a good excuse for them to go to the bank. Yeah. You know, and that's where they meet or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was pretty helpful for sure.
Yeah.
What are some other things to help break up responsibilities?
Well, if you happen to have a GMPC in the group, which it's a little bit easier to do, you can feel like at various times you actually can participate as a player and let the narrator GM run things, and you can kind of be the eyes on the ground as opposed to the eyes in the air, then you can have a more nuanced, developed GMPC at that point, because you don't have to feel like that character is primarily there to drive the plot along, because you still have a GM sitting beside you who is doing that, which means then your GMPC can be a lot less static and be a lot more of a wild card, and intentionally, like we kind of hinted at before, intentionally suggest things that go completely against what the plot actually wants you to do. So we go in guns blazing, and that's the worst idea in the world, but you know, you can be a little bit more of a wild card, even make the other GM say, wait, you told them to do what? Yeah. And you can just can shrug and do the whole, it's what my character would do.
Yeah, I mean, GMPC's definitely, like you said, more eyes on the ground scenario there. And, you know, it gives you a chance to play that piece, you know, player character every once in a while without also feeling like you have 20 other things to worry about at the moment.
Yeah.
So having the dual GM or the co-GM aspect there, you know, it gives one a minor reprieve from GMing potentially, or, you know, being, like you said, just providing other ideas, keeping things dynamic and fresh with the party, or, you know, having like, all right, you made a GMPC, great, as the other GM, here's a quest that they've been wanting to have accomplished. And so now, you know, or we made a NPC that now we gave it some more characteristics and more abilities and or class definition and, you know, play with that. But, you know, I need them to have this flaw and this goal in mind. Right. Know? So, like you said, it's could be wild card. The why they want to go in guns blazing is because maybe it's a rival gang for them and they just got extra help to, you know, deal with that.
Yeah, doesn't mean it at all helps the party, but it helps them.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So just different fun, creative ways there.
Yeah. One of the things with that you and I know we've struggled with on GMPCs and how they're often played is the fact that because you're the GM, you always have a third person omniscient viewpoint. Right. Even if you're playing a particular character, you're playing it with under the guise of I actually know everything, where if you have somebody else that can be the third person omniscient, you're allowed to step into roles where, just like the players, you can become, at least for a short period of time, third person limited. And so this character and I, as a person at the table for the time being, only know what the character knows, and you can step away and not feel the burden of, you know, almost doing your own metagaming in a way, you know? Sure. And so I can just step away and say, for the moment, if they ask me a question, I don't answer as a GM. I answer as the PC or as the NPC, and they may get good information. They may get half the information. They may get terrible information, but that's what they get for asking this particular character, as opposed to if you have a solo GM and a GMPC. A lot of times, kind of like what we were saying before, they ask the NPC because they're the quest giver, they're the info dumper, and so then you feel compelled to give them, you know, a whole 3-page encyclopedia entry. And, you know, they're sitting there saying, I just asked what you wanted for breakfast. You
know? Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, man, I really don't know. So quit trying to press me.
Right.
Yeah. So which kind of leads into, you know, we talked about secret lore already from like a GM to GM, like before sessions or between sessions. You know, how would that look during sessions as well?
Well, if it's collaborative secret lore and you collectively have said, hey, we're going to hold this off until this particular story beat, then one person is probably responsible for making that dump and, you know, saying, oh, here's the moment that everybody's been waiting for. But then the fun part may also be if only one of the GMs knows about this secret lore, then, you know, the other one can be just as surprised as the players are to have this thing uncovered. And then everybody kind of is scrambling to take in the new information and figure out what do we do with this, this dump that's been, you know, laid in front of us.
Yeah. And as you said, with like the GMPC not knowing everything, you know, like third party or third person limited, you know, it doesn't have to have this feel of knowing everything all the time. Like,
right. They can actually have the look of shock and surprise.
Right.
And because they really didn't know.
Yeah. It's easier to do, you know, acting in that sense, like what, you know, like an NPC figuring out from another NPC information. They're like, oh, gasp, I totally didn't know that. And it's just because you're one person, you're the GM, all the things, you know. So it's a fun thing there.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so I mean that's some of the breakdowns that we had during sessions. I'm sure there's plenty of other things we would love to hear, comments as far as, other great thoughts for, divide and conquering in terms of responsibilities. But I have a couple of, end parting thoughts, but is there anything else that you'd like to cover here?
No, not necessarily. It's mostly a matter from here in deciding what your strengths are, knowing what you're best at as a GM and knowing what the other GM is best at. And that's not necessarily even to say find somebody who is a polar opposite of you, because there's a good chance you may not see eye to eye enough to be able to work together. But there are certain things that they do extremely well while you may be so-so at it. And there may be things that you almost take for granted how easily it comes for you. And that may be something they struggle at. So identifying your strengths and their strengths is probably the easiest way to figure out how to start splitting up the responsibilities from there.
Yeah, you and I have kind of talked about this with, about each other, for each other, just factions, NPCs, like NPC voices, different things, and like what our strengths are as GMs. Mm-hmm. And so just knowing like, hey, could you tackle this? Cause I know you're great at it. Like you are fantastic with factions. Like, I'll come up with an NPC, give it some life, put it in your faction that you've given life, and you run with it because you're better with voices, and I'll narrate the story because, descriptors, like whatever right. that might be, yeah. The rules better than I do. Like, why don't you handle the encounter, like general knowledge, and instruct and help the players have a more fun time? Or, this, evil creature,
you homebrewed this creature. So
yeah, you homebrewed and gave it tactics and intelligence. And so, I'll leave that to you since you made all that. I don't want to butcher, your lovely creation, and just kind of knowing that, and dividing correctly is a great thing. So yeah, that was kind of my thought there, is just, know what the strengths are. And you don't have to, like you said, you probably shouldn't be polar opposites, or there's going to be conflicts as to every step of, story progression, how you're going to run things. But just that extra collaboration of knowing, syncing up between sessions, during sessions, just knowing how the other GM kind of operates, and just being on the same page with pretty much everything. It takes a lot of kind of upfront information, but like we said, having twice as much content being created, or you making NPCs and I don't have to worry about that. I just know that some NPC is gonna, betray the party. You just tell me which one's the best one for the, for the situation.
Yeah.
Kind of interject that way. And it's imagine a group, research project or something, a group project, but everyone wants to do their part. Yeah, you don't see that too often, but
you got to do the research, you got to put together your slideshow, you got to practice the presentation, and you have to actually not sleep through the presentation day, that type of thing. But yeah, if you have people who are actually wanting to collaborate and wanting to share the load, it's almost impossible at that point to not get a really good grade and not be really impressive to the people you're doing your presentation for.
Yeah. And we've talked about different levels of preparedness, so to speak. If it's a little bit different, I feel like, with dual GMing to an extent. Like, if you Anthony work better off the cuff? I could just say I need an NPC that, you know, is greedy, but, you know, needs something done. You just need to make that happen. You know, right. You know, like, yeah. Or this is the general goal I want for the end of the session. Wing whatever it is you need to wing, but I have my own stuff planned out. I could share, you know, with you some of that stuff. And,
right.
You know, as listeners, don't think that's just piggybacking, but, you know, recognize that if one GM is all off the cuff, you have to kind of work with that. Or if it doesn't work, then find a new GM to partner with.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just how it is. It's like,
yeah. And I think that's how it worked for us, although we hadn't necessarily nailed down that aspect of our GMing styles, I think, at the time. But I think because you are a lot more pre-planned, that it made sense for you to handle the basic narration. And then anytime anybody asked a question or there was required to be more off the cuff improv, then I would just jump in and either answer the question or fill out the lore that we hadn't fleshed out ahead of time, that type of thing. And then it just became canon, or dropped a new NPC in there and they became canon. We hadn't planned it. But that was where my contribution fell in, and yours was just slow and steady, stay the course. We have a story arc we want them to continue on. And then again, we can lean into all those other cool things of splitting the party up, or, you know, having multiple branching adventure paths down the road based on their decisions. But you kind of helped to maintain the flow chart. And then I was there to kind of fill out the extras along the way.
Yeah. You gave it, you know, substance, where there was a little bit more direction, or I was like, all right, you know, here's the general goal for tonight or the next, you know, quote unquote mini story arc, whatever that might be. Like, make sure you just enhance to that direction.
Yeah.
You know, like, and then you'd be, got it. Good to go.
Yep.
You know, Boblin's going to make his move.
Yeah, there he goes. Yeah.
Yeah.
When you least expect it, right when you're in the middle of a heart to heart.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I know, like, you know, some of the stuff that you worked on really well was the world building and the faction stuff. So it was like, okay, I took from that, you know, started working on a nice story, the frame, the wire frame, a little bit of some things. And then sort of was like, all right, this is what I'm working with. You go add some nice tiny features and, you know, make it more lifelike.
Right.
Yeah. Just, you know, knowing how the other GM works is a fantastic, necessary thing to do. But, you know, syncing up, but I think it worked out really well. Like, I do miss the fact that we didn't do this longer.
Yeah.
I know in other games we've tried other aspects, you know, trying to be like an assistant at various aspects for, you know, helping out GM wise. But I really like the split here, the cooperative dual GMing. But
yeah. Yeah. So, and if you're interested in maybe dipping a toe into that, you can try some of the stuff that, like Joseph said, we've done later on in games that I've been running, and we got to the point. I mean, our main group, if everybody's there, there's at this point, I think 9 PCs, and occasionally, depending on where you are, I've got a GMPC involved in there. So it's been great to have you occasionally remind people, all right, you're up next, you're up after that. Remember, you've got these many slots, you know, this person is half dead, that type of thing, while I'm continuing to run the story. And you don't really know hardly anything about the main story beats, the plot points, that type of thing. Although that was something early on that I had you help me with too, was I've got to figure out how to encapsulate all of these characters. Can you help me like split up these 3 main story arcs? And you help me kind of develop a basic flow chart, make sure that it at least made sense. And then since then, you might remember some of those conversations, but I haven't necessarily gone back to you. So it's still relatively fresh for you. And maybe it'll pop up and you're like, oh yeah, I sort of kind of remember talking about that. So yeah, you've been able to assist in places where I felt like I was starting to get over my head, but for the most part, you've been able to just play as a player.
Yeah. And I guess to that point, as far as knowing certain things. Like, I don't know the specifics, but even if I did, I wouldn't want to metagame that for myself because I would be, you know, losing out. But if there was a need to metagame, it was to help keep the story going. Yeah. You know, even if it was the loosest term of like, you wanted us to get, you know, to this city, City A, you know, it's like, all right, well, we're over in no man's land. Like, and in the back of my head, if I do know that we need to get to City A and I see us all just waiting around, I'd be like, well, how about City A as an option? You know, like,
and I think we had to do that at least at one point, that they were seriously considering going to this other place that they had already been. I knew it was going to take, at that point, you were doing a whole bunch of just overland travel. It was going to take you a week or two in game to go. And I nudged you in the middle of the week and said, can you please convince them, just keep moving? Because I don't want to, as a GM, you know, drive them in that direction. But if you can convince them in character, it would be a huge help for me and for them, because they're not going to find anything new. It's just going to be a waste of time and it's going to be kind of a spoiled session. And yeah, sure, no problem.
Yeah. Yeah. So that worked out. I guess that's a cooperative GM light, if you will, or player plus.
Right.
You know, knowing a little bit of that information without all the things that we've discussed, but like, yeah, helping out with encounters and, you know, just some general brainstorming of certain things. And, you know, sometimes during our brainstorming sessions early on, again, like you said, I don't know which one you went with. I just was like, oh, here's a good idea or here's an idea or, you know, but you know, you decide later and I'll figure it out in game, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So lots of different ways, you know, if you need kind of a, you know, insider player to help not drive the story, but help with, you know, steering the ship every now and again, sometimes, at least in our group, you know, discussions of what to do next is a thing of, you know, contention and time consuming discussions.
Right.
So it helps. But
yeah, if you don't want to necessarily put people on a railroad, it's sometimes the next best thing or a far better thing is to get them on a bus with the bus driver who at least knows the destination.
Who at least knows what the road is.
Yeah. Right. At least has seen the road in, you know, on a map before.
But to add to that, it does help at least a new player that is maybe interested in a GMing, or specifically the dual GM aspect, I think is really cool for a player that's like, I think I want to try this DM thing, but I don't know. And we haven't really talked about that really, but I think maybe we should just dive into that just a little bit more in depth here of like, you know, like, I don't know what all is involved with being a DM. You know, GM, as far as like, I'm just a new player. I see you doing things and you're telling this great story. I want to see a little bit behind the scenes. You know, maybe I am not confident enough to have it all dumped on me from, you know, story arc to story arc, like what we talked about is one of the types. But this way I can be that backseat driver, you know, help with things between sessions and then build up a little confidence, make some NPCs, build that confidence, maybe act out an NPC once or twice, you know, just to, you know, you're slowly getting your feet wet without needing to take the wheel immediately.
Yeah. I find for the most part that everybody, good GMs eventually will develop both their story leg and their system leg. But I find that early on, people who have not been a DM before and would like to be, it's because they have an itch to scratch on either the story side or the system side. Like, mm-hmm. I want to actually run a combat. I want to be on the other side of the table. You know, I want to be the one that's kind of determining how the fights go. And I've got some cool mechanical ideas or, you know, a creature that I want to see played out, but they don't actually have the slightest idea how to craft a good story. And a lot of them are the exact opposite. I have a really amazing story, but I don't really understand all the rules and I don't want to get bogged down in all of that. And I'm also afraid of telling people the wrong thing. But I've got an amazing story to tell. And so that's when you can bring, as an accomplished DM, you can bring along a new person kind of under your wing as the apprentice and say, okay, well, you do the thing that you really want to do. I'll handle the rest of it and let you, I'll fly co-pilot. And whenever you feel uncomfortable, let me know, or I'll just see it on your face, the deer in the headlights look, and I'll pick it up and run from there until you feel comfortable again, taking the reins back. And yeah, it's a great way to encourage new people to get their feet wet. Cause I've heard so many horror stories of people saying, my friends have always wanted to do this. I was the only one who had even a little bit of experience. And so I decided to run it and it went terribly. And I'm never going to run again as a DM. I may not ever play again. It was just a horrific experience. And I feel like some of those is because they didn't get the opportunity to kind of ease in.
Yeah. I mean, cooperative GMing is a mentoring thing if you want it to be that, there's nothing stopping you from doing what we just said. And it gives people that chance to scratch that itch of like you said, the story or encounters or just some other neat idea. And then it's like the kid that just has their training wheels just loosened at first, so it's technically still on a rail, but it's, you're wobbling back and forth, you're still doing it, and then eventually the GM is taking the wheels off and holding on and letting go, and you're going a little farther, and it's like, hey, you have what it takes to run your own game now. Go thrive. And
you don't realize awesome. It but I haven't been holding on for a while now. You're on your own.
I've come up with a couple of loose plot points for you and you've been doing the rest and you're good to go.
Yeah. My little girl's all grown up and saving China.
Exactly. So I think it's definitely a great option for that. We've talked about the other benefits already, but that's a big important one too, that I think is great for the community as a whole. And
Yeah, for sure. I'm glad you brought that up, because I think that's a good way to wrap things up. If you aren't already mentoring people, if you're always complaining about being the forever DM, it may be because you haven't encouraged or equipped the people in your group to actually take on the reins and give it a test run. And it may be that doing this co-DM, dual GM thing is right exactly what they need, because it says, I'm not going to let you fly solo. I'll be right there with you the entire time. I think it's a good middle ground to start people off. And it could be that you start an amazing campaign with that person, and even when they feel more comfortable, you realize it's way more fun to do it with two people than with one.
It seems like as well get a whole set, a whole campaign, just, the two of you, and then they'll feel more confident afterwards. And most forever GMs don't know how to transition without just throwing them in the deep end, and then that doesn't work. And therefore
and they take over again because that failed.
And then they're like, all right, who wants to do it next? And no one wants to drown as well. So they all,
Everybody looks at poor Gary over in the corner who failed miserably. And they're like, I don't want to be Gary.
Yeah. I don't want to do that. So, I think this is a way for forever GMs to equip themselves to not be forever anymore. So, anyway, that was some stuff. I mean, let us know if there's other ways of how to break up, dual or cooperative GMing. These all worked for us in a lot of great ways. So let us know.
Or if you have other questions about how that all breaks down, or how would I set it up in this particular situation, or even I know you're super busy with new baby and stuff like that, but I may have time just to sit down with you on a Discord chat or in Twitter or something like that, and kind of help you start, the next steps along that journey. But I feel like, if there were to be any new innovation I don't even want to call it new, but any innovation in tabletop role-playing games, I feel like this is probably the next step in where they need to go. It's such a, it's a time saver. It's all way more fun, and it gets you to that next step in the collaborative effort that everybody really wants to be a part of.
Yeah. Collaborative effort that either everyone wants to be a part of, or they don't realize they need to be a part of.
Right. That they should be a part of. Yeah. And again, it's that mentoring thing that we all, regardless of, you know, our business leanings or, you know, anything else, we should be bringing more people up to enjoy the hobbies that we, you know, enjoy, to like the things that we like. We do it with our children, we do it with family members, we do, you know, we should be looking for more people to develop. It's great leadership skills, and, you know, why wouldn't we be looking to build better leaders?
Very true. Yeah, awesome.
Well, I think I'll get off my soapbox now, and
I think that's all we got, though. So you know, we might, you know, if there's enough comments and questions, we might do maybe a Q&A of just dual GMing. But
stay tuned. We'll have to figure out a way maybe to get a workshop that people can actually see it, or at least hear it in action. That'd be fun too.
That would be. Well, until next time.
Yeah, we'll catch you guys later.
See ya.